Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America on Saturday, November 5th. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington. Authorities in Tigray accuse Ethiopia of carrying out drone strikes on civilians less than 2 days after signing an agreement to end their two-year-old conflict.
Leaders, activists, and participants gather in Egypt for the 2022 United Nations Climate Change Conference.
We know that climate change has been much more severe in the poorest countries, and they also happen to be the black and brown people of the world, so it's a racial injustice. Secondly, there's a gender dimension very clearly in that.
And Cameroon's President Paul Biya makes 40 years in power.
The opposition political parties want him to revise the electoral code, making sure the next president of this country should be democratically elected. Cameroonians now want a democratically elected president.
Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa.
Health officials are linking a significant rise in African Ebola outbreaks in this century to climate change. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Uganda's September 20th Ebola outbreak is just the latest in a growing number of eruptions of this deadly hemorrhagic disease in Africa. Since 2000, the World Health Organization has reported 32 outbreaks of Ebola, 19 in the last decade compared to 13 in the preceding one. Ebola is one of a range of zoonotic diseases, infections originating in animals and jumping to humans. A World Health Organization analysis finds Ebola and other viral hemorrhagic fevers constitute nearly 70% of these outbreaks. The remaining 30% include dengue fever, anthrax, plague, and monkeypox. WHO Africa Incident Manager for the Ebola outbreak in Uganda, Patrick Otim, said Thursday the number of zoonotic diseases occurring in the region in the last decade has increased by more than 63%.
There have been a couple of researches that have shown a possible link between the climatic changes that we are seeing and the increase in zoonotic diseases, and for this particular case for Ebola, for instance.
Otim said diseases are caused by several factors. Ebola, he said, is strongly influenced by the human factor. As populations increase and people encroach on wildlife habitats, interaction with animals increases. This, he said, increases the spread of disease to humans. Otim said temperature and climatic changes also spur migration and movement of some Ebola virus hosts.
And for the Ebola virus, we know that the bats and other animals are hosts of this particular virus. So when they move from areas where, for instance, there is drought or weather areas that are no longer conducive for them, and they move to favorable areas, they may move into an area where the human population are habiting, and therefore the interaction between the humans increases.
WHO says Ebola now has spread to 7 districts in Uganda beyond the original epicenter in the Mubende district. The latest reports put the number of cases at 131, including 48 deaths. This Ebola outbreak in Uganda is caused by the so-called Sudan strain, for which there is no vaccine. WHO said several promising candidate vaccines soon will undergo clinical trials to evaluate their potential against Ebola. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Authorities in Tigray say Ethiopia has carried out drone strikes on civilians less than 2 days after signing an agreement to end their two-year-old conflict. According to the French press agency AFP, Spokesman for the Tigray People's Liberation Front, Kaindeya Gebrehiwot, said on Twitter that the attacks occurred on Friday in the city of Maichui. He did not specify the number of those allegedly killed or wounded in what he said was artillery shelling. The wire service says it has not been able to verify the claims. So far, there has been no response by Ethiopia or the African Union. Many observers say it will be difficult to implement the peace agreement, which promises to disarm, demobilize, and reintegrate TPLF fighters. They say the deal lacks clear details on how to achieve those goals. South African police say the bodies of at least 21 illegal miners were found outside the mine this week in the town of Krugersdorp, west of Johannesburg. Police say murder was not suspected, but the bodies appear to have been moved. Security analysts say illegal mining by migrants from neighboring Lesotho, Mozambique, and Zimbabwe has been adding to gang crime in the country. Linda Givitash reports from Johannesburg, South Africa.
The discovery of 21 bodies of suspected illegal miners near an active mine in the town of Krugersdorp, west of Johannesburg, has shocked the country. It is far from the first such incident. The town also saw 8 women gang raped at gunpoint in July, and police at the time arrested dozens of illegal miners among the suspects. Willem Els is a senior training coordinator with the Institute for Security Studies in Pretoria.
These guys are not random. They are part of massive, well-organized crime syndicates that are operating transnational. So we need the intelligence to guide us in order to develop good strategies. And then they need well-trained police officers that are well-equipped in order to challenge this unique challenge that we have in the mining industry.
El said the country's intelligence and policing operations are failing and are even infiltrated by organized crime syndicates.
Law enforcement in South Africa is not what it's supposed to be. They're not on the level that they can really prevent this. We also have a challenge with porous borders in the region where, for instance, in countries like Zimbabwe, their deposits of gold are dwindling, the mines are closing, and those people are without work. And then it's a welcome opportunity for them to cross the border into South Africa, most of the time illegally.
Experts say foreigners aren't just digging underground, but are part of international networks to sell the minerals overseas. Witness Maluleke, professor of criminology at the University of Limpopo, says the activity wouldn't be possible without South African involvement.
The South African youth are part of it, and South African organized criminal networks are part of it. So there's that much to say that it is only illegal immigrants that are contributing largely to this crime or this practice. It is misleading.
Maluleke said tackling illegal mining requires efforts to address other factors that drive people to crime.
People are not working. People, they need to eat. They need to take care of themselves. So they take these enterprises as an opportunity to get money and to commit various crimes that are happening on our mines.
The illicit activity is costing South Africa and the mining industry millions. There are more than 6,000 derelict mines in the country, some of which have been abandoned for decades. Police officials and experts say the mining industry needs to take more responsibility for properly closing old sites. John Steyn is a criminal justice professor at the University of Zululand.
Mining houses must take responsibility in policing themselves, in taking ethical and moral accountability, plan more effectively, and so forth. Mining houses must preventively act towards reducing illegal artisanal mining and use, for example, those that don't have work to rehabilitate the mines.
The mine shaft near where the bodies were found had been flooded by recent rains, but police say autopsies will be conducted to determine cause of death. Linda Giftash for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Tanzania's Prime Minister Kassim Majaliwa told lawmakers Friday fires burning on Mount Kilimanjaro the past 2 weeks have been largely contained after hundreds of military personnel were deployed this week to fight the blaze. Speaking to Tanzania's parliament, Majaliwa said the fire destroyed some 33 square kilometers of the Kilimanjaro National Park, a UNESCO World Heritage Site that is home to many endangered species. He said fires also spread to other areas on the mountain adjacent to the park, but they were contained and tourist areas were saved. The distinctive snow-capped mountain is visited annually by thousands of tourists from around the world who come to climb the 5.9-kilometer-high mountain. As leaders, activists, and participants gather in Egypt for the 2022 United Nations Climate Change Conference, observers say it's a unique opportunity for African countries to make their voices heard on the continent's challenges and potentials in tackling the climate crisis. A report released this year by the Mo Ibrahim Foundation, The Road to COP27, Making Africa's Case in the Climate Debate, discusses, among other things, the difficult task of ensuring that everyone in Africa has access to energy while also protecting the environment, and highlights the obstacles that remain to be overcome in order to maximize Africa's renewable potential. For more insight, VOA's Lenoir Moudou spoke with Mary Robinson, chair of the Elders and former president of Ireland.
We know that climate change has been much more severe in the poorest countries, poorest communities, small island states, and indigenous peoples. And they also happen to be the black and brown people of the world. So it's a racial injustice. Secondly, there's a gender dimension very clearly in that. Different social roles of women, different power, or rather lack of power, different access to credit, etc. And yet they have to be put food on the table, make their communities resilient. And the third injustice is the one that young people are very vocal on now and calling us out on, which I'm glad about, because they see they're not going to have a safe future unless we deal with the problems now, and the injustice against nature. What I'm also hearing, and heard it very clearly at the Mo Ibrahim Forum, is Africa doesn't want to be considered just a victim. Africa also is contributing hugely to mitigation of carbon through the forests, for example, in Africa. If we had a proper price on carbon, Africa would benefit enormously.
What are the main hurdles to overcome and challenges to address when it comes to unleashing the potential of Africa as a key resource for global energy transition?
We know the climate crisis has affected disproportionately. Then COVID came along and we didn't have fair and equitable access to vaccines. So that put a heavy burden on governments. And then we had rising costs exacerbated now by this war in Europe. The invasion by Russia of Ukraine is distorting food and fuel and fertilizer prices. And African countries are suffering disproportionately again because of a dependence on importing food. It's a lesson to Africa to produce far more food locally, partly for climate reasons, because the long supply chains across oceans, that also has a huge emissions. That's a big part of the carbon problem, the shipping or the air transport. That's part of these long globalized supply chains.
If you were to give us two or three key recommendations to leverage Africa's potential while ensuring the preservation of its environment, what would they be?
There is a commitment to double adaptation finance. But actually, if we had the proper target, we'd know that's not nearly enough. We have to go far above that. 100 billion is only, implementing a way of de-risking to bring in the trillions that are needed, including significantly to help Africa to have energy justice, a fair, equitable access. And I found the same messages at the Sustainable Energy for All and the same involvement of young people, I'm glad to say. And it just makes a difference. I think it has the makings of a good COP. If African leaders come bringing a lot of the messaging that we've heard at this Mo Ibrahim Foundation, and including a self-acknowledgement that there has to be a step up on governance.
A lot of people are frustrated when they see that there are all these meetings and they say there is no big concrete change afterwards. For example, what sort of impact has the person on the ground in Africa seen after a big meeting like COP26? And what needs to be evaluated this year at COP27?
I have to say there were at least some important issues dealt with at COP26. One was that we can't wait another 5 years or 3 years for the big emitters, the G20 countries, to increase their ambition, because we're not on track for a safe world. On one of the last days, Climate Action Tracker came out with a report that said if all the pledges made before and at COP26 were implemented, we would still be on course for a 2.4 degree world. And of course, they're not being implemented, and we're on course for a worse world now. We need a strong, unified African voice demanding of those who've been omitting most, both historic and the countries like China, India, Russia, that are current, and Saudi Arabia, that are big emitters now. It is really important that we seize the innovative ideas and the fact that a lot of the material minerals for a green economy for the world are in Africa. They mustn't be extracted and exploited out of Africa elsewhere. They must be developed in Africa with clean energy. And that can all be done if there is proper financing. And that financing is slower, partly because of good governance reasons. So it's all tied in together. And I have great hopes for Africa because of its youth.
That was Mary Robinson, Chair of the Elders and former President of Ireland, speaking to my colleague Lenoir Modou. Cameroon's government and supporters are holding events this week ahead of celebrations Sunday marking President Paul Biya's 40 years in power. Meanwhile, opposition parties are holding rallies calling for the 89-year-old Biya, the world's oldest head of state, to change what they say are unfair election laws. Moki Edwin Kinzikam reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Supporters of President Paul Biya sing that Cameroon has remained one, undivided and prosperous, despite the numerous challenges the Central African state has faced since Biya became president in 1982. The singing and dancing on Thursday in Nanga Eboko, on the outskirts of the capital Yaoundé, was part of week-long activities marking the 40th anniversary of Biya's rule. Biya's Cameroon People's Democratic Movement, or CPDM, said it dispatched party officials to towns and villages to organize conferences and mobilize more support for the 89-year-old leader who, it says, has achieved a lot for the country. Elvis Ngolengole is one of Biya's close collaborators in the ruling party. He says freedom is top among the things Biya should be credited for.
Every citizen can express themselves in any way they want. I give the example in particular of the woman. She doesn't have to live as if she's a prisoner of the man.
He says under Biya's rule, Cameroon has vastly improved its education system.
In 1982, we had one state university. Today, we have more than 11 state universities and hundreds of private university institutes. Incredible in 40 years.
Ngole says Biya has stayed in power this long because a majority of Cameroonians love and always vote for him. However, opposition political parties accuse Biya of rigging elections for decades and wanting to stay in power until he dies. The Cameroon Renaissance Movement, led by Maurice Kamto, says Kamto won the October 2018 presidential election and that the victory was stolen from him. Another party, the Social Democratic Front, has joined the CRM in asking civilians not to attend anniversary celebrations to protest Biya's long stay in power. Christopher Ndong, the CRM's Secretary General, says Biya shows no signs of giving up the presidency.
Cameroonians are aggrieved because of him. The opposition political parties want him to revise the electoral code, making sure the next president of this country should be democratically elected. Cameroonians now want a democratically elected president.
Ndong said many of Biya's supporters have resigned from the ruling party and joined the opposition CRM during the anniversary event. The ruling CPDM acknowledges that it has some internal leadership wrangling, but has provided no details. Loic Kanke is a lecturer of public law at the University of Yaoundé. He says Biya's absence from conferences aimed at drumming up support indicates the aging ruler is tired. He says many CPDM supporters want Biya to leave, but fear reprisals if they express their views in public.
Le secrétaire général a demandé également aux camarades militantes et militants, n'est-ce pas, du RDPC, de mettre un terme.
He says Jean Kwete, the secretary general of the CPDM party, acknowledged during a meeting with decentralized CPDM party structures this week that leadership squabbles are tearing the party apart. He says malaise within the CPDM is pushing supporters and disgruntled CPDM leaders in many Cameroonian towns and villages to cross over to the opposition Cameroon Renaissance Movement Party of Maurice Kamto. Biya's supporters are calling on the octogenarian to run for president again in 2025, while the opposition is asking him to hand over power to a younger leader. On July 30, during a visit to Cameroon by French President Emmanuel Macron, Biya said he still has time to decide if he will run again. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Kenya's wildlife authorities say the ongoing record drought has killed more than 200 elephants in the past 10 months, along with countless other animals. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi, Kenya.
Kenya has lost thousands of treasured wildlife animals to drought in the past 9 months, says the country's Minister of Tourism in a new report. Speaking in Nairobi Friday, Tourism Minister Penina Malonza laid out figures from Kenya's national parks.
I confirm that different species of wildlife have been affected by the drought, with a total of 14 different species of wildlife being affected between the month of February and October this year. The drought has resulted in the deaths of the following species of wildlife. Wildebeest, we've lost a total of 512 animals. Common zebra, we've lost a total of 381. Our elephants, we've lost a total of 205.
In the past few weeks, the East African nation has received sporadic rainfall, but the officials suspect it will not be enough to spare more animals from dying of thirst, hunger and disease. The ministry say it is providing water to animals in the most affected areas of the Amboseli, Tsavo and Samburu ecosystems. Malonza says the ministry will expand its research centres to help overcome the dangers of drought to wild animals.
Support our wildlife research and training institutes to undertake well-structured monitoring of wildlife mortality in all protected areas and key ecosystems to better understand the effects of the drought and recommend future and timely appropriate management action.
Kenya's tourism sector employs more than 2 million people, and the industry is the country's second largest foreign exchange earner, behind only horticulture. Bouncing back from the drop caused by COVID-19, the industry has brought in about $1 billion this year, nearly double from a year ago. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
control of the U.S. Congress is at stake on November 8th when American voters will elect new representatives in the House and Senate. As VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson explains, just a handful of races across the country will decide whether Democrats remain in power or Republicans win the majority.
After months of campaigning and with millions of voters, just a handful of states will decide if Democrats keep their slim majorities in both the U.S. House and the U.S. Senate. President Biden campaigning in Pennsylvania, one of just a few key Senate races out of the 35 this year that are still too close to call. And where Democrat John Fetterman is facing health concerns about a recent stroke.
But it knocked me down, but I'm going to keep coming back up.
Fetterman going up against Republican candidate Dr. Mehmet Oz, who has been endorsed by former President Donald Trump. Dr. Mehmet Oz, Republican Senate candidate.
I would support Donald Trump if he decided to run for president.
All right.
But this is bigger than one candidate. This is a much bigger story about how we are going to build a bigger tent to let more Americans feel safe.
Polling shows the race for control of the Senate is so tight, there is no advantage for either party, even though conventional wisdom says that Republicans should benefit from having a Democrat in the White House. George Washington University's Casey Bergat.
You can just check back throughout history with very, very few exceptions. After the first couple of years of the president's first term, that party just loses power, that people look back, they see a record, and almost all of the campaign promises are not fully met yet. And so people get a little frustrated, and add that with some troubling economic numbers with inflation and gas prices up until now, people really getting hit within their pocket.
But in the southern state of Georgia, where early voting is already underway, social issues have also played a role in the race. Republican candidate Herschel Walker denying allegations he paid for a girlfriend to have an abortion. Republican Senate candidate Herschel Walker.
The abortion thing is false. It's a lie.
Polls show a close race between Walker and Democratic Senator and former pastor Raphael Warnock. Democratic Senator Raphael Warnock.
I think that part of the problem with our politics right now is that it's become too much about the politicians.
And in the southwestern state of Arizona, immigration is a key concern. Democrats Mark Kelly distancing himself from Biden's border policies. Democratic Senator Mark Kelly.
I've been strong on border security, and I've stood up to Democrats when they're wrong on this issue.
It sounds like,
including, by the way,
yes,
including the president.
His Republican opponent, Blake Masters, like many Trump-endorsed candidates around the country, continues to claim fraud spoiled the 2020 election, even though numerous lawsuits over the issue all failed in court. Republican Senate candidate Blake Masters.
I suspect President Trump would be in the White House today if big tech and big media and the FBI didn't work together to put the thumb on the scale to get Joe Biden in there.
All 435 U.S. House seats are also up for re-election this year. Currently, Democrats hold an 8-seat majority in the lower chamber. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
Listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of the Voice of America. I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, in Washington. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from across the continent. Excitement is building as we get closer to the World Cup kickoff on November 20th in Qatar. My colleagues Sunny Young and Mokbil Yabaro are taking a look at the five African teams battling for the championship this year: Cameroon, Ghana, Morocco, Senegal, and Tunisia. In this segment, they take a look at the Lions of Teranga, Senegal's team.
Mokbil, in Group A, African champion Senegal will kick off its World Cup campaign November 21st when it plays the Netherlands. Who are the players to watch for Senegal?
Sonny, I'd have to start off with Bayern Munich's star and Senegal's top scorer, Sadio Mane. He also really brings the offense together as he can play both attacking midfield and striker. I then would have to go with the Chelsea duo, starting off with the captain and star defender, Kalidou Koulibaly, and goalkeeper Edouard Mendy as integral parts of the Senegal side.
Mukbil, will Senegal's opening match against the Dutch be its toughest test in the group stage?
I believe it will be the most challenging game for Senegal, Sonny, as they have a solid defense led by Virgil van Dijk that may make it difficult for the Senegalese side to have their way. It's also a team that has made it to the World Cup finals 3 times, but has yet to win it all. So I'm sure they'll give it everything they can with the opening game to assert dominance in the group. But that'll still leave the Lions of Teranga in a great spot to feel out the group. If they're able to come away with a win or draw, they should be able to advance to the knockout phase, as Ecuador and the host nation Qatar don't really have as much firepower as the reigning champs of Africa.
Senegal is led by head coach Aliou Cisse, who played for the Lions of Teranga at the 2002 World Cup in Japan and South Korea. Mukbil, how important is Cisse to Senegal making a successful run in Qatar?
I believe his success with this team has been because they have a head coach who understands the totality of who these players truly are, whether it's ones that want to make an impact on the world stage so that they can go on and play for bigger clubs, or ones who are already doing that and want to do it for their home country. He understands it all, you know, having been the captain of that 2002 Senegal side that made it to the quarterfinals and having experience in the Premier League with Birmingham and Portsmouth. He really understands what it takes for his team to get there and beyond.
Mukbil, our now retired VOA friend, Chaka Sali, the former host of our Straight Talk Africa program, used to like to ask guests to answer from the deepest, better part of the bottom of their hearts. In the deepest, better part of the bottom of your heart, Mukbil, do you think Senegal can better its 2002 World Cup performance and make it to the semifinals or even the final?
Sonny, that's a tough, tough question, man. But I will say, if there was ever a chance for an African team to best that quarterfinals appearance, it would be this team. I feel as though this team plays excellent team ball, and they have 3 key players that I mentioned earlier that have leadership across the board. They're also coming off that AFCON win, which I'm sure will give them a boost as well. So to answer Chaka Sali's question, from the deepest, better part of the bottom of my heart, I feel like Senegal can go further than the quarterfinals. You heard it here first, Sonny.
What about fan support, Mukbil? Do you think many Senegalese fans will make the trip from Dakar to Doha?
From what I've heard, Sonny, I've been hearing and seeing online thousands and thousands of Senegalese fans from all over will be making a trip to Qatar to support their team. Hopefully, they'll give them that boost that they may need to overcome that hump to be able to surpass that quarterfinals in 2002. As we all know, fans are a huge, huge, huge role in confidence building for their players.
Right now it's time for music from our African collection. Enjoy.
Ivi unaniendesha mapenzi yanakupapa nipatie intention siruki ushanivunja mbawa. Umenigea dozi, umezidisha dozi, nimetepeta kama jozi, kama jozi. We gon' spend life,
many others here, how many brothers here, you met a pecker, Dama Josie, Dama Josie, let's have good life. You take it when I'm in me, you take it when I'm in me, you take it when I'm in me, oh me, oh me, oh me, oh me, you take it when I'm in me, you take it when I'm in me, love, you take it when I'm in me.
Uh-huh. my desire. Hope you my be reason. Your body give me fever. I done the shiver when you hold me tight. When you my
baby,
desire.
Baby, I dey colo for your love.
Colo, colo.
I dey mad for your love.
Baby, I dey colo, colo.
love. Anywhere I go, they come up with my bama love. Don't they do like bala?
If you want me, make a ginger, give me the cocoa. My body be your love. Come, make a show you my banana. Don't they do like bala?
Make a love, make a rub, make a touch a bunny. Make a rubber bunny. Till I go lotion, I'ma rub a bunny. Like fine wine, say you sweet when you whine. Me, I know if you leave when you whine. As long as we go day, I'm on amigo pay. Yeah, we go day nice. If we enter the place, I go day nice. I go fiki, I go rewind. Say na me go be the DJ, I'm on feel nice. Say my party show they stop to the daylight. Before you long go, they shot you, make you think twice. If not smoke, you want smoke, say we day tight. I'm on my love, bro, say we live nice. Yeah.
If you want me to ginger, give me the cocoa. My coach, I beat your love. Anywhere I go, just come up with me, my bumma love. Yo, they do like bala.
If you want me to ginger, give me the cocoa. My bad, I beat your love. Come make a show you my banana. No, they do like bala.
Yeah, yeah, damn.
I been making money, living reckless.
That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline Africa team, we say thank you for joining us tonight. For more African news and features, visit our website at voafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, in Washington, wishing you a very good evening.